This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Welcome back. You got Nightlight with Pete Schwabe here. We are broadcasting statewide all over this beautiful state of Wisconsin from beautiful downtown Green Bay here at City Deck Landing. I'm very excited to welcome this next guest. This is her first time on Nightlight, and she is performing here in Wisconsin. She's doing a tour all over, but she is going to be in Baraboo on Saturday night, and she is known as Sweden's Queen of Swing, and she's just great. It is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight jazz musician Gunhild Carling. Gunhild, how are you?
Good. I'm just playing.
You just playing?
Just sitting here and playing and warming up for my concert.
It's a pleasure to meet you, and I'm excited that you're coming to this beautiful theater in Baraboo here in Wisconsin. We're a couple hours away from there, but it's a gorgeous theater. I've been watching your videos. You just are so much fun. Have you been?
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Have you been to Wisconsin before?
I have. I have been to Milwaukee, and I have also been to Baraboo, actually.
Oh, okay. So you know the drill. All right, that's very good. All right,
it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. So tell us. Okay. So I've just become familiar with you in the last few days. I love jazz. You're a jazz musician, but you also sing and dance. Can you tell listeners who might be interested in going to the show if they hear this interview but aren't really familiar with you in terms of what your show gives them, what will the show be like?
It's very much energy, and I play classic jazz melodies, like, yeah, you can imagine from the Blueberry Hill and all of me. And
oh,
this,
great.
And I also do some originals. I perform for the King of Sweden, and they asked me to compose a song. So this song called Hothead, I will perform, and I have composed a lot of songs. That is, and I play a lot of instruments. So I mix classic jazz in Louis Armstrong-ish style, and then I play a lot of different instruments, and I also have brought my bagpipes, my recorder.
Wow.
I tap, yeah.
Nice.
I tap dance. And I play trumpet, and I play trombone, and then I have, like, yeah, a jazz band by my side. It's like my daughter plays trombone, saxophone, and piano bass drums.
Was your first instrument, did I read this correctly? You started with the trombone, and now you play, like, how many instruments do you play?
In the show, I play 10 different instruments, including harmonica and recorder, piano, bass, harp, trumpet. But I think, you know, I play so many medieval and Renaissance instruments. We don't even know the names of those instruments. So I count to maybe 20.
Wow, that's really impressive. All right, so you have this, you're anchored in jazz, I would say, but what I've been reading about you is that you do a lot of, like, pop hits with a jazz arrangement. Can you talk about that a little bit? That sounds really fun.
Yeah, so actually I have done some pop songs. It was mainly disco and rock. I made it into trad jazz 1920s style.
Oh,
so
I
played, like, yeah, I did this and Never Gonna Give You Up. And I did, Happy, Pharrell Williams. And
yeah.
I do it as a cabaret act where I change instrument every 10 bars. So, yeah, I like melodies. I like songs. So it's a very good thing to just, take a popular melody and do something about it.
Do people go crazy when you play Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley?
mainly, I think my number one hit is Abba's Dancing Queen.
Oh, I can see that.
That has been a really big hit, yeah.
And they're from Sweden, too. That
for
must be excited.
Reason.
Have you ever met them?
Exactly. No, not really. I have met, like, in the surrounding of them, like, people around them, but I never met the real ABBA, the four of them. No, not together. But I'm friend of one of the families and so one of them I know.
Okay, so personally, I fell in love with jazz about 20 years ago. I didn't know much about it before then. When did you appreciate jazz in your life? Like, it sounds like you've been playing music your whole life. When did you fall in love with jazz, and what inspired you to kind of follow that course in your career?
So it has been the big stars that has inspired me from my young, since forever, since I was a child. And it was Armstrong, Ellington, Billie Holiday, Count Basie, also Benny Goodman, and all this big band stuff, Chicago stuff. Yeah. And I like, that is what has been inspiring me. And I like the style and the sounds and so.
How old were you when you first discovered jazz? Very young, or kind of after you'd been playing some instruments for a while?
Yeah, I think I was 10 or something.
Okay. That's great.
My whole teenage, I was listening a lot to jazz. A lot to Billie Holiday, actually.
Oh, Billie Holiday's great. That's kind of young, don't you think? I mean, maybe not in Sweden, but here, I don't think young people really appreciate jazz until they get older, if ever, for that matter.
No, maybe today. We don't know because internet is so full of different kind of music. But I think like most people, they start with rock. And for example, they like this Led Zeppelin and so, and then they go over to Django Reinhardt. And after that, they discover like blues. So it's a very different way today how people find jazz.
Yeah, for sure.
But for me, I like the old classic jazz.
Yeah, same here. So you're playing the beautiful Al Ringling Theater in Baraboo. It's December 14th. My guest is Gunhild Carling. She's a jazz musician. She is the Sweden's queen of swing, really, which is exciting to have her here on Nightlight. Do you also sing, you dance, you're very high energy. How long does the show go typically?
It's 90-minute show.
Wow.
And I'm tap dancing and, you know, it's a lot of, I want it to be a feel good.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of humor, and then I play a song, and then I say something, and the whole band, it's very energetic. And also the songs, the wonderful songs, the wonderful melodies.
I'm very impressed by that, like what you just said, because it seems it's so rare now that most entertainers, they're not all like people like yourself or the crooners back in the day, like the Rat Pack and people like that. They could tell jokes, they danced, they sang. Why don't more people still do what you do?
I think I have heard very many times that you should do one thing and do only one thing. And do it good and shut up. Okay, so that is how. Be good at what you are and don't do only one thing. Yeah. But it's more old-fashioned 19th century that you do 10 different stuff and you mix them together to your personality. I mean, it's old. I think it's very old-fashioned.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's great. And it sounds like it's going to be a really fun show. I was reading about you before. It said you grew up with a musical family and now your kids are very musical. You just mentioned your daughter before. She's found the trombone. How important is music to society, but also in the home with a family? I mean, what does it do and how does it enhance your family?
So music is very important because for some reason, and I'm very kind, and my husband, we're like not authority people. We are like very like kind, but my first and best communication with my kids was through music because they didn't listen to what I say. They do what I do. So when I play, they want to play with me together. And it's very important to play together because it's a way, it's a take on how to communicate and how to interact with other people. Playing is perfect.
I agree. And it's nice. I mean, I always had music on when my kids, like Saturday mornings, I put on like iHeart or whatever, some jazz music or older music. And I think it's just a nice soundtrack for your life, right? Like some nice background music can enhance your mood, make you get along better. I completely agree with you. That was a great answer.
Yeah, jazz is fantastic because it's popular music, but it's still so old that it's like you can notate it. It has arrangements and like, you know, European old classical music has, you know, you read notes and you sit and play at home and everyone plays violin. But you can actually do that with jazz as well. But now we have Jelly Roll Morton and King Oliver because those arrangements are so diverse and so like artistically made and on both high and the low level, like Mozart. It's like easy to understand and listen, but it's like there is complexity as well.
Yeah.
But for me, it's, you know, because I'm a woman, I want to be with my kids and so, and I'm a mom. But there are very few places that accept minors because I play on clubs and bars.
Right.
So playing at home is very important because that is actually a place where you can play with your minors, and I have been live streaming and so that has been very important.
That's great. Do you tailor your show to where you perform? Like when you're performing overseas or when you're here in America, do you do the same show or do you add or take things out based on who the audience is?
No, because everything I do is so not trendy at all. So it doesn't matter. I can tell you my last show was the day after Thanksgiving. And my whole band, and it was like a star band from New York, they were stuck in traffic. So I have to stand alone in front of hundreds of people and do a show completely of my own. I was taking song requests. And I had my Blues Brothers moment. And I played trumpet. And then I played, okay, Louis Armstrong and the difference between Louis Armstrong and King Oliver. And I don't know if people really care. But, you know, since I am so into this and so, nerdy around it, maybe they are interested. And then I went over to the trombone and talked about Jack Teagarden and everything, you know, trombone players. And then I went over to medieval music contra Renaissance music and my recorder and how they played in the 15th century and so. And I was thinking, when are these guys coming? And I did call and response with the audience, like, Heidi, 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 ho. And the audience was like, and now I was feeling, okay, I could not be closer to Cab Calloway than this. And there came the musicians and showed up and we started to play the whole show.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Stay tuned for the rest of the interview.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, so here's a question for you. When you're not touring or playing your own music or recording your own music, what do you listen to?
I am listening to all kinds of music since I'm scrolling on the social media. So it's a lot of different kind of music. So it can be classical and it can be soft jazz, but what I want to listen to is jazz.
That's great.
Mainly only jazz.
If I were to sing something for you right now, would you critique it for me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to know that. I'm not going to do it. I just wanted to know you were willing to critique me. Okay.
No. What does critique mean? Be negative or say like, no.
Give me some pointers. You know, I don't usually sing on the show though. So
feedback. You mean feedback?
Yeah. Feedback. There you go.
If I can give constructive feedback, I would give. But the best feedback you can give is just go do what you want. Do you.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So we have about 1 minute left and I'm going to end the interview. And this has been an absolute pleasure. When did you decide, you grew up with music, when did you decide, okay, I love music, I want to make my living at music, I want to go out and tour? When did that happen?
It was just a natural thing because, okay, I play trumpet in Armstrong style and trombone in Jack Teagarden style, and I sing a little like Billie Holiday mix with like Doris Day. And who I'm not employable. with those. And I play a little ukulele and I can play 3,000 songs from the Great American Songbook. So, I mean, I have to set up my own show. It's the only thing I can come to think about.
Oh, that's so great.
And I paint. I paint also, but I mean, my paintings are. I sell them on my shows.
That's so great. Well, listen, Break a Leg in Baraboo. It's December 14th. Gunhild Carling, this has been an absolute pleasure to meet you. Knock 'em dead and have a great tour and safe travels.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I am so excited.
All right.
So excited.
Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
All right. We will be right back with more Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. All right. That was Gunhild Carling. She was fun. Are you going to get tickets
a lot
to
of
go?
Fun.
Are you going to get tickets like you guys did? Your family bought tickets to Charo, right?
Yes.
When Charo was on, she's playing the same theater down in Baraboo.
Yeah. The Al Ringling Theater. Historic.
That's right. Historic theater. It's supposed to be beautiful. And like Charo, she is multi-talented, dancing, singing, playing instruments. Those performers and entertainers aren't really around much anymore. So it sounds like a great show. All right, we're going to pivot here. So we covered wrestling. We covered pro wrestling. We covered jazz musicians from Sweden. And now we are going to turn to kind of a lost art. Book writing and reading, at least reading for me. Our old friend Brett Kissinger joins me now. He is a Wisconsin author based in Algoma, who is quite prolific, and he joins us now here in the studio on Nightlight. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's great to have you back here. So I say that, Brett, and I'm kind of saddened. I always say, and I've said this on the show, I plan to be a reader again. I was an English major. I used to read a lot, and now my brain is just gone from iPhones and TV and all that kind of stuff. Somehow I manage to, when I'm writing a screenplay, I stick with it and I can focus. But I have issues reading when I try to read books, you know, that I just can't stay focused. What do you make of that as a writer? And does that depress you that I just said that?
A little bit. It's understanding. I think it's the job of the writer to make sure that you can't put the book down.
Okay.
Some people like the audiobook. Some people like a Kindle. Some people like the actual physical book.
Okay.
I think it's also the time of day you're reading, probably. You know, if you're trying to read late at night, it's a good way to fall asleep.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I end up reading like the same sentence 9 times. But I do that with TV too. I'll watch a scene, I'll fall asleep, I'll wake up, I'll rewind it, and I'll go through that whole dance for 10 minutes, you know, before I finally pack it in. I assume that you're a reader as well. I mean, most writers seem to get a lot of inspiration from other writers. To find techniques or even a storyline maybe that you can not steal, but take something from and kind of make it your own. How many books a year do you say you read?
Probably 50 to 60.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's why I ask that, because writing is time consuming. You know, it's like I always like, I don't know. It seems like acting is easier. Directing is easier. Writing is what is so tedious. And it's like a math equation. When you have a script or a book, everything has to make sense. And it's so time-consuming. Reading is time-consuming. Pardon me. So the fact that you're a prolific reader and writer, I don't know when you sleep, but that's impressive.
Yeah. I definitely do read a lot. And I don't read in my genre of historical fiction.
Okay.
Only because I don't want to emulate anybody I read.
That makes sense.
So
yeah.
I do like to read outside my genre. I read a lot of biographies.
Okay.
I like drawing inspiration from real life because fact is generally more fascinating than fiction most often.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's funny that you say that because I think you said that last time you were on that you like biographies and that's where you get ideas from characters.
Yep.
And that's great. Leon Uris is one of my favorite writers back when I used to read. Where do you rank him in the historical fiction category?
I actually haven't read him.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
you'll have to check out Trinity.
Okay.
And then let's have a discussion about that book because there are times in that book where I just literally almost lost it in tears in a reading a book. Like he's that good of a writer at times. Do you have? We have to do a break soon. Then I want to go full steam into your book. How do you write? Do you write every day at the same time, or do you write when the mood catches you? What's your process?
I definitely try to be disciplined, so I write at the same time every day. Okay. Usually at night, from probably 5 o'clock to 8. That's kind of my window during the week.
And then anything
during the weekend is kind of a bonus, but I definitely try to stick to like a regiment where I'm, because I feel like if you take the easy way out, or if you, you know, fall privy to like a mistake, or like I'm going to watch Netflix tonight, like that should, becomes a habit. So
right.
My habit's going to be, I'm just going to work. So
procrastinating is kind of like the snowball effect sometimes, right? It just gets easier to do the more you do it. And I find that, I don't know if you find this, but when you sit down to write, even when you're not in the mood, you tend to come up with something and you end up being happy you sat down to write. Is that true with you?
Yeah, definitely. If you stare at that blank cursor, it just becomes like this ominous, undefeatable thing. So I just keep writing, and even if it's crap, there's going to be some little specks of diamond in there that you can
make that cursor out. Your muse, buddy. Yeah. That's what you do. All right, Brett Kissinger is here. When we come back, we're going to talk about his book, The Surviving Remnant. He even has a trailer for it. I don't even know how you did that, but I'll ask you about that too. We've got Civic Media award-winning news headed your way right now, and we'll have more with Northeast Wisconsin writer Brett Kissinger on Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com. Don't blame me. You want a cash out. And get the hell out of town.
Don't be a baby. Remember what you told me. Welcome back. We're talking agents here with Brett Kissinger. He is a writer based in Algoma, Wisconsin, who just published another book, very prolific. Brett, it's funny, we were talking about agents, and I think it's like I haven't had an agent in a few years, and I thought you were going to say the agent said they'll represent me if you have a lot of money and followers and that kind of, because that's what it's all about right now, right? So how do you get, your book is The Surviving Remnant. Tell us about that, then we'll continue our discussion about getting an agent and getting your book out there, because it's a challenge.
It is. So The Surviving Remnant is the story of Jacob Majeski, who is a Holocaust survivor. So the book takes place in two time periods, during the concentration camps and then in the 60s after he's made it out. And it was really a heartbreaking term to come across, the surviving remnant. It's what the Jewish people refer to the survivors of the Holocaust, which is just horrifying and tragic. And doing research, you know, everything kind of ends in 1945, right? The war ended, you know, we celebrate in Times Square. But for the Jewish people, they were kind of left to fend for themselves. They opened what were called displaced person camps. And a lot of these were housed in concentration camps that were repurposed. So if you lost your family, you had to sleep in the same barracks years later that you lost your family in. And tragically, a lot of countries did not accept Jewish people. So there was millions of people that had no home. German Jews did not want to return to Germany, rightfully so. I mean, that was the country that, you know, eliminated them.
Right,
horrifically.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it wasn't until 1949 that the United States started accepting Jewish people. But there was a caveat. They maxed it at 200,000 people. And 90% of Jewish people were disqualified because they came from Eastern countries in Europe, where the United States was concerned that they might have communist sympathies. So that's the start of the Cold War. So there were so many rules in place for these survivors to even come to America, you had to have somebody sponsor you up to a year. So if you had family, you could reach out to them. But in a lot of cases, when you came to America, you changed the spelling of your name. So even if you knew you had a cousin, you know, your last name is Majeski, it's spelled differently in America, just trying to find these people. And the most heartbreaking stat that I came across reading was that there was 47 million pieces of paper people had scribbled names on looking for loved ones that they were trying to sift through in the 40s with no computers, nothing, just these handwritten notes. They tried to create phonetic spelling so you could kind of cover the spectrum of spelling of last names. But yeah, 47 million pieces of paper that they were trying to find answers to.
So Jacob tracks people to South America, which is where a lot of Jewish people ended up, right?
A lot of Nazis.
Or a lot of Nazis, I'm sorry. And he's tracking the people that, you know, basically mistreated Jews, killed Jews. So where does that, how much research went into this story? I mean, the stuff you're saying, just to learn the facts you're learning and about the history, you kind of have to educate yourself about an entire chapter of world history before you can even write page one. Correct?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge undertaking. But you owe a responsibility to history to get it right.
Of course.
Especially to the Jewish people. And what really struck me is like the theme of the book, I think any good film, book, it asks a question of the reader. And my question is, what debt do we owe the dead? So in Jacob's case, he lost his family. Would his family want him to get revenge, or would they want him to truly live and live in a way that he embraces, you know, having children, just living freely and letting go of that burden? And I thought that was a really good question of how do you let go of something like that?
Okay, that's fair. And the story is he goes to seek revenge, but he meets a girl, right? And just what you said, is the best revenge living well or paying homage to your family who were killed? Do you live well or do you seek revenge? How do you, I don't want you to do a spoiler thing. I want people to read the book, but how do you as an author give your readers satisfaction? Because, you know, as we sit here and talk, I'm thinking, get revenge, kill them all. But that's kind of a happy ending, but him learning how to trust people and be human again and get rid of the scars, I mean, that's a victory too. So how do you figure out as an author what you're going to do? Do you try to make people happy? Do you write how you want to see it end? How does that work?
Really, I mean, I like to say, yeah, you're a writer, so sometimes you think you have an idea and you start writing it and your characters have a different idea where it's going. And I think the best thing is, as a writer, is when you get to a certain point and you're like, I don't know which way to go here. Mm. You know, like I could go one of two ways. It is tricky, but ultimately I think you just have to trust the character to make the decision. I mean, that kind of sounds cliche, but really, I really enjoyed writing Jacob's journey as like a broken man. He lost his faith and just this, you know, throughout the novel, just becoming a better version of himself that he thinks his family would be proud of.
Okay. That's a good answer. So where can people find the book and how many pages is it?
I believe it's 387.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. They can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Yeah, check out my website, brettkissinger.com. I've got book trailers that you can watch for all five of my books.
Let's talk about the trailer. Like I told you during the break, I was on tons of different web pages every day, and I saw this trailer, and I'm like, oh, this looks cool. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought I was on Brett's site. And I was. You have a trailer with visuals and music and actors for a book. How did you do that? And you've got these people, these incredibly good-looking people that look like actors. Is that AI? How did
it
you
is,
do that?
It is AI.
Wow.
So it's a multi-step process. There's a website, Discord, where you can create an image off a prompt.
Okay.
You take that image, and then there's another website that can create motion to it. There's another website I use for the narration. So it's really editing. It's you know, writing the script, and it's a long process, but I definitely like the way they turned out.
It's like a movie trailer for a book, and I think it's great because it hooks people the way it would a movie and sucks them in. And then you've got these great pictures, too, of South America, and boy, this must have taken a while to put together.
Yeah, it did, definitely.
So how long did it take you to write this? Let's say you start. I know last time you were on the show, you talked about this is what you were working on when you were talking about the, what was the other book?
The Winter Tiger and the War Eagle.
Winter Tiger and the War Eagle. So we'll talk about that next. But how long did this take to write?
I would say about a year. I started writing last December, and I released it last Friday the 6th.
Wow. That's kind of fast, right?
Yeah.
To go from page one to completely finished.
Yeah.
And you said you have editors. How long is that process? And what does a typical editor come back at to you? Hey, you misspelled this word. Hey, this whole passage isn't working. You could lose chapter 12. What do they say to you?
Yeah, generally, it's more along the lines of like grammar, but I do ask for feedback on plot, any areas that could be cut. But generally, it's just making sure the commas are in the right spot and you know, the word choice, any missing words, just
the your there,
yeah.
There. We always,
yeah, pretty
we
good
always
those,
miss
but,
those. Well,
yeah.
I know when to use them, but when you're writing fast.
Oh, yeah.
And I find that when you're proofreading, you have to do it out loud. You have to read
Definitely.
It out loud or you won't catch it because your brain
fills
goes
in
to,
the gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right. So when it comes to your material, you fall in love with your characters, you fall in love with your book and your story. It's like you're creating a world. It's kind of a godlike thing.
Yeah.
You create these people. This world did not exist before you sat down to write their story. Someone comes along and says, Brett, we'd like to make this into a movie. That can do great things or it can be a train wreck. Where are you at with that? Are you at the point where, I don't know if you've ever had that done before, but would you be like, where do I sign? Or would there be some trepidation there?
I would definitely be ecstatic. I would have some trepidation because I've seen some bad
adaptations.
Yeah. But it also would probably depend on the network. Like I feel like HBO does fantastic stuff.
Yeah, they do.
So I would be pretty stumped or stoked. But
yeah.
I mean, I would definitely be beside myself with excitement. Just to see what you have on the screen. Because when I write, maybe you do the same thing. Do you create like the soundtrack for your, as you write? Like, do you envision certain scenes having music to it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes I listen to that when I write too.
Yeah. Definitely.
Just to kind of get in that mindset. And it's, you know, like I would say over the last year, most of my energy has gone to this show, but there are times I miss sitting down and writing and just putting on your headphones and locking out the world.
Yeah.
It's great, you know. Conrad, I think you should option Brett's book for $1. This is how everybody wins. You drop some papers. You say, Brett, here's $1. I want to option your book. You get to go tell people, I got this up-and-coming producer, Conrad Krieger, option my book. Conrad gets to say, I'm a producer. I've got a great piece of material. It's win-win.
Win-win.
All right. Well, I had a little more enthusiasm.
You know,
I
thought, win-win.
I'm excited more about this than you guys are. So how do you do this, Brett? Do you typically bounce ideas off people? Do you ever write with someone? Or is it kind of just all in your own head?
It's all in my own head.
Okay.
You can get opinions from people, and that actually happened with my third book, the Murder Mystery. I was telling my friend Andrew about it, and then he made the mistake of telling his wife about it, and then I kind of got caught like, all right, now I got to write this. And I was happy I did it, but generally – you know, writing is such a time-consuming process that you really need to be in it for yourself, selfishly as that sounds, but like you need to be all in on the idea, not so much other people, because you're the one spending the nights, you know, sitting behind the computer creating it. So it's really got to be something you're passionate about.
Do you ever, when you sit down to write, do you pour like a glass of whiskey? Do you ever have a cocktail? And just put yourself in that. You don't write those kind of like murder mystery. Well, you kind of do.
Yeah.
You ever have a little outside influence through a glass?
No, not really.
Oh, wow.
That'll just make me sleepy.
Look at you, Mr. Hoity-toity. Okay. Yeah. Paul Schrader, the guy who wrote Taxi Driver, I went to hear him speak once at the Writers Guild, and he said, write drunk, edit sober.
Like, that's a good one.
His theory was you come up with great stuff when you just let your brain go crazy. But I'm kind of with you. I've done it that way, and I'm like, yeah, this is really hard to remember even what I meant to write last night. So I can't get through it that way, you know.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about taking a crack at movies or?
Yeah, I've written screenplays. That was my first love, and that's what I was trying to break into. A lot of comedies I was writing, and that's one thing I miss in book writing is the power of music and film.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about writing with music, and there's a lot of times where you get that epic music or that romantic music, and you're like, oh, this scene is great.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I need to, does this scene work without the John Williams soundtrack in the background?
Because you're not going to have that.
You're not going to have that. So I think, you know, film has that emotional, like you can evoke so much emotion through music
that
you kind of have to translate into words on the page, which is challenging. So I feel like in movies, you kind of have that insert epic Hans Zimmer score, and it's like, all right, you're safe. Like, we could just have two guys staring across the room. It's going to work.
You could just do that for the whole film. Insert hilarious joke here.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. Do you want to buy it? just to give you an idea, in my own experience, I fell in love with this piece of music that the editor put to something I had done. It was The Godfather Green Bay. And it was this great song by this band called The American Wake. And they were in Orange County. And I contacted them and I said, I got to have this music in my film. And they said, well, we were covering that. It's this artist in Ireland. I had never heard of the guy. His name was like Pete St. Clair or Pete St. John or something like that. So several phone calls later, I finally got in touch with this guy who isn't a huge name. He's like kind of, you know, somewhat known. He wanted $100,000 to use 3 minutes of the song in an independent film. I said, Pete, I go, this first, you know, it's an honor to meet you, but the whole budget is less than $500,000. I can't. And he was like, not wavering at all. He's like, all right, well, nice talking with you. I'm like, yeah, you too. And then I just felt like I wanted to swear at him.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man, let me use your music, you know. But it's expensive. You're right. If you can't get married to big time music like that because you just won't have it if you make it. But Brett Kissinger is here. He is an Algoma, Wisconsin-based writer, and you can check out his new book, The Surviving Remnant, at brettkissinger.com. All the information you need is there, including a trailer, and it'll tell you how to purchase the book as well. It looks fantastic. We'll be right back after this. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You know what this music, what movie this music was in?
I don't.
A movie called Collateral. With Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx. Tom Cruise plays a hitman who rolls into L.A. and he has to take out five witnesses in one night. He has to make five stops. He hires Jamie Foxx to drive him around in a cab, doesn't tell him what he's doing, just acts like he has to have papers signed. And there's one scene where they go to a jazz club because they have time to kill. And Tom Cruise, you find out, while they're watching this jazz performer and the place clears out, he buys the jazz performer a drink, sits him down. Pretty soon it's just the three of them in the club. And then you realize he's one of the guys that Tom Cruise has to take out. It's a brutal scene. It's a great scene. The actor, his name escapes me at the moment, but the guy who plays the jazz musician is great. Jamie Foxx is great. Tom Cruise. It's a great movie. To me, it's like almost a perfect movie.
Awesome.
So yeah, check it out. But I love that Miles Davis. All right, Kurt Krause is here, ladies and gentlemen. He is a Green Bay, Wisconsin-based, Northeast Wisconsin-based actor and producer. So, what would a film office do for Door County? Would that bring film to Door County and try to get things shot there? You're kind of limited as to what you can shoot there. It's a beautiful area, but you can't really shoot any kind of urban things there.
Yeah, not urban, but there's such a variety of landscape and environmental. You've got beautiful resorts. You've got like 1,001 unique individual buildings, whether that be barns, you know, little wedding chapels. It's very scenic and very versatile.
Yeah.
But we're hoping this film office would be the one-stop shop for if somebody's considering shooting something, you would find it right there on the Destination Door County website. And you could click to find locations, or these are gear rental places nearby. These are production people who are living up here. These are actors you could potentially hire as local, and the idea is that you can get a lot of that legwork done just by coming right to that website.
Nice.
And then, of course, Destination Door County being the tourist hub, they've got all the business emails. So if businesses were on board to offer catering or whether it be, you know, offering trucks for Grip and Electric, you could have that whole list there and contact info.
That's huge. What kind of movies? Like, it seems like Door County is so beautiful. I almost picture like a romance movie, like a Somewhere in Time being shot there. Or, you know, the area is also famous. We've talked a little bit about this on this show, shipwrecks.
Yeah.
Like, and there's ghost stories involved. Like, you could either shoot like really scary stuff there or really kind of sweet romantic stuff, it seems like.
I think it does draw a mix of the two, because the last project I worked on up there, Angels in the Rye, had that very sweet element to it. And it, at least the scenes they shot in Door County were dating and going out to the restaurant. And then, you know, one of the other projects I knew that was up there in the last year or so was done as a horror film. So I think you can get that draw for both.
That's pretty cool. Well, I wish you luck with that. The meeting is tomorrow. Keep me posted on that. I would love it if there was a Door County Film Office. And not just because I want to show up with a casserole. I do, Kurt is going to swim. You're going to swim the channel again, you said?
Well, I have a bigger one coming up.
What are you going to swim next?
So whether it's going to be
across Lake Michigan.
Not quite.
Oh, come on, dude.
But I would love to, in this next year, do the Death's Door swim, which would be a 7-mile swim.
Oh, you are out of your
from
mind.
From Washington Island to
you
Gilles
are
Rock.
Crazy. You're not doing that.
And believe it or not, it's been done by just a small handful of people over the years. But
did anybody ever get lost while they were doing that?
Not to my knowledge, one gal, she trained for quite a while, and she did that swim. And she was the first to do it. And then I think it was two or three friends who all swam it together a number of years later. So it's a really kind of a fascinating history of swimming in Door County.
Listen,
as well.
if you swim Death's Door, Kurt, and I'm telling you this because you're a friend, get yourself a really heavy duty pair of water wings, because ships go down there. You think you're swimming that? That's crazy.
Well,
you got to have a spotter for that one.
That one will. Yeah. That will absolutely have a spotter.
So, all right.
Yeah, we'll do it safe. We'll do it right.
This on the stream, Craig Knitt says, "Pete, you and Kurt are an inspiration. Wow, I love what you have to say about the arts to our youth." Well, Craig Wood. Craig's a teacher, and he does a lot of great things teaching kids the arts and acting and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And then in all caps, He typed Door County Film Office. So people are on board.
That's awesome.
And if my casserole puts you over the top tomorrow, maybe I should bring a bundt cake too.
I think that would really seal
the deal.
Some
refreshments.
Yep.
Conrad, bring some Yoo-hoo, maybe some juice boxes.
A boom boom stick.
Let's nail this thing. Let's bring a boom boom stick. this has been fun. We got off to a rough start. We had some technical issues. The guys in Madison crushed it. Conrad worked hard. Todd Michaels was on the phone with us. We figured it out. We finally got Dan Schaefer on the show on time at 6:35. And then Kurt Krause was patient enough. He gave us a few more minutes with Dan before he came in. Tomorrow night, it is our popcorn pick of the week, ladies and gentlemen, with former mayor and co-host of Mino and the Mayor here on WGBW and WISS, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt will be making our popcorn pick of the week. That's tomorrow night at 6:35. And then I will be joined by Rob Thomas, who is the CityCast Madison newsletter editor and a film critic who has done great work over the years and is just a phenomenal critic. I almost agree with everything he writes. And that's tomorrow night on Nightlight. But what do you got, buddy?
Well, I brought you a picture from Godfather Green Bay,
okay,
circa 2003.
All right, so here's the picture. I made this film, The Godfather of Green Bay, I shot up in Marinette for 20 days. Then we shot in L.A. and Vegas for a week, and Kurt was an extra. Can people see that, Conrad?
That's closer a little bit.
Closer.
And up. Right, and up, because you see the camera right there.
I'm going to have a T-shirt.
There you go.
How's that? Good God.
I think they got the gist of it.
Listen, it's almost too handsome of a picture anyway to show to the general public. Hey, thank you for coming in, buddy. This was fun.
Thank you for having
me.
My
thank you to Dan Schaefer. Thank you for all your texts and calls tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for sticking with us. We will be back tonight, and the lovable producer Conrad will be here too with his chapstick. So that's tomorrow night on Nightlight. Good night, Wisconsin.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.